then I would exhort you, from this ground, to trust in him. Seeing he alone is the absolute sovereign Lord of all things, seeing he has passed a determination upon all things, and accordingly they must be, and seeing none can turn him from his way, O then, Christians, learn to commit yourselves to him in all things, both for this life and the life to come. Why are ye so vain and foolish as to depend and hang upon poor, vain, depending creatures? Why do ye not forsake yourselves? Why do ye not forsake all other things, as empty shadows? Are not all created powers, habits, gifts, graces, strength, riches, and see, like the idols in comparison of him, who can neither do good, neither can they do ill? Cursed is he that trusteth in man, Jeremiah 17:5. There needs no other curse than the very disappointment you shall meet withal. Consider, I beseech you, that our God can do all things, whatever he pleases, in heaven and earth, and that none can obstruct his pleasure. Blessed is that soul for whom the counsel of his will is engaged. And it is engaged for all that trust in him. He can accomplish his good pleasure in thy behalf, either without or against means, all impediments and thorns set in his way, he can burn them up. You who are heirs of the promises, own all your privilege. What his soul desireth, he doth even that, and what he hath seriously promised to you, he desires. If you ask, who are heirs of the promises? I would answer, simply those and those only, who do own them and challenge them, and cling to them for their life and salvation, those who seek the inheritance only by the promise, and whose soul desires them and embraces them. Oh, if you would observe how unlike ye are to God! Ye change often, ye turn often out of the way, but that were not so ill, if ye did not imagine him to be like yourselves, and it is unbelief which makes him like to yourselves, when your frame and tender disposition changes, when presence and access to God is removed. That is wrong. It speaks out a mortal creature indeed, but if it be so, oh, do no more wrong. Do not, by your suspicions and jealousies and questionings of him, imagine that he is like unto you and changed also. That is a double wrong and dishonor to his majesty. Hath he not said, I am the Lord, and change not? He is in one mind, who can turn him? How comes it then, that ye doubt of his love as oft as ye change? When ye are in a good temper, ye think he loves you. When it is not so, ye cannot believe but he is angry, and hates you. Is not this to speak quite contrary to the word, that he is a God that changes, that he is not in one mind, but now in one, and then in another, as oft as the inconstant wind of a soul's self-pleasing humor turns about? Here is your rest and confidence, if you will be established, not within yourselves, not upon marks and signs within you, which ebb and flow as the sea, and change as the moon, but upon his unchangeable nature and faithful promises. This we desire to hold out to you all, as one ground for all. You would everyone have some particular ground in your own disposition and condition, and think it general doctrine only which layeth it not home so, but believe it, I know no ground of real soul establishment, but general truths and principles common to you all, and our business is not to lay any other foundation, or more foundations, according to your different conditions, but to lay this one foundation, Christ and God unchangeable, and to exhort every one of you to make that general foundation your own in particular, by leaning to it, and building upon it, and clinging to it. All other are sandy and ruinous. Let us now, in this sad time, press consolation from this. The Lord's hand is in all this. It is immediate in every dispensation, and it is only carnal-mindedness that cannot see him stretching out his hand to every man, with his own portion of affliction. Know this one thing, that God is in one mind, for all these many ways and judgments, he is in one mind, to gather the saints, to build up the church, the body of Christ. This is his end, all other businesses are in the by, and subservient to this. Therefore he will change it as he pleases, but his great purpose of good to his people, all the world cannot hinder. Let us then establish our souls in this consideration, all is clear above, albeit cloudy below, all is calm in heaven, albeit tempestuous here upon earth. There is no confusion, no disorder in his mind. Though we think the world out of course, and that all things reel about with confusion, he hath one mind in it, and who can turn him? And that mind is good to them that trust in him, and therefore, who can turn away our good? Let men consult and imagine what they please, let them pass votes and decrees what to do with his people, yet it is all to no purpose, for there is a council above, an older council which must stand and take place in all generations. If men's conclusions be not according to the counsel of his will, they are but imaginary dreams, like the fancies of a distracted person, who imagining himself a king, sits down on the throne, and gives out decrees and ordinances. May not he who sits in heaven laugh at the foolishness and madness of men who act in all things, as if they had no dependence on him, and go about their business, as if it were not contrived already? It is a ridiculous thing for men to order their business, and settle their own conclusions, without once minding one above them, who hath not only a negative, but an affirmative vote in all things. It is true that God, in his deep wisdom, hath kept up his particular purposes secret, that men may walk according to an appointed rule, and use all means for compassing their intended ends, and therefore it is well said, prudens futuri temporis exitum caliginos and oct premit dies. But yet withal we should mind that of James, if the Lord will, and go about all things even the most probable, with submission to his will and pleasure. And therefore, when men go without their bounds either in fear of danger, or joy conceived in successes, redip, si mortalis ultra fas trepidit, and see, excessive fear, excessive hope, excessive joy in these outward things, is, as it were, ridiculous to him, who hath all these things appointed with him. To him be praise and glory. Lecture 15. Of Predestination. Ephesians 1:11. In whom also we have obtained an inheritance, being predestinated according to the purpose of him who worketh all things after the counsel of his own will. Romans 9:22 and 23. What, if God, willing to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath fitted to destruction, and that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy which he had afore prepared unto glory. In the creation of the world, it pleased the Lord, after all things were framed and disposed, to make one creature to rule over all, and to him he gave the most excellent nature, and privileges beyond the rest, so that it may appear that he had made all things for man and man immediately for his own glory. As man was the chief of the works of his hands, so we may, according to the scriptures, conceive that he was chiefly minded in the counsels of his heart. And that, as in the execution of his purpose in creating the world, man had the preeminence assigned unto him, and all seemed subordinate unto him, so in the Lord's purposes concerning the world, his purpose about man has the preeminence. He, indeed, has resolved to declare the glory of his name in this world, therefore the heavens and the firmament are made preachers of that glory, Psalm 19:1 and 2 and c. But in a special manner, his majesty's glorious name is manifested in man, and about man. He hath set man, as it were, in the center or midst of the creation, that all the creatures might direct or bring in their praises unto him, to be offered up in his and their name, to the Lord their Maker, by him, as the common mouth of the world. And the Lord hath chosen this creature above all the creatures, for the more solemn and glorious declaration of himself in his special properties. Therefore, we should gather our thoughts in this business, to hear from the Lord what his thoughts are towards us, for, certainly, the right understanding of his everlasting counsel touching the eternal state of man, is of singular virtue to conform us to the praise of his name, and establish us in faith and confidence. Predestination is a mystery, indeed, into which we should not curiously and boldly inquire beyond what is revealed, for then a soul must needs lose itself in that depth of wisdom, and perish in the search of unsearchableness. And thus the Word speaks in Scripture of this subject, intimating to us that it is rather to be admired than conceived, and that there ought to be some ignorance of these secrets, which, conjoined with faith and reverence, is more learned than any curious knowledge. But withal, we must open our eyes upon so much light as God reveals of these secrets, knowing that the light of the Word is a saving, refreshing light, not confounding, as is his inaccessible light of secret glory. As far as it pleaseth his majesty to open his mouth, let us not close our ears, but open them also to his instruction, knowing that, as he will withhold no necessary thing for our salvation, so he will reveal nothing but what is profitable. This is the best bond of sobriety and humble wisdom, to learn what he teacheth us, but when he makes an end of teaching, to desire no more learning. It is humility to seek no more, and it is true wisdom to be content with no less. There is much weakness in our conceiving of divine things. We shape and form them in our minds according to a mold of our own experience or invention, and cannot conceive of them as they are in themselves. If we should speak properly, there are not counsels and purposes in God, but one entire counsel and resolution concerning all things which are in time, by which he hath disposed all in their several times, seasons, conditions, and orders. But because we have many thoughts about many things, so we cannot well conceive of God but in likeness to ourselves, and therefore, the Scripture, condescending to our weakness, speaks so. How many are thy precious thoughts towards me, saith David, and yet indeed, there is but one thought of him and us and all, which one thought is of so much virtue, that it is equivalent to an infinite number of thoughts concerning infinite objects. The Lord hath from everlasting conceived one purpose of manifesting his own glory in such several ways, and this is the headspring of all that befalls creatures, men, and angels. But because, in the execution of this purpose there is a certain order and succession, and variety, therefore men do ordinarily fancy such or such a frame and order in the Lord's mind and purpose. And as the astronomers do cut and carve in their imagination cycles, orbs, and epicycles in the heavens, because of the various and different appearances and motions of stars in them, whereas it may be, really, there is but one celestial body in which all these various lights and motions do appear, so do men fancy unto themselves an order in the Lord's decree according to the phenomena or appearances of his works in the world, whereas it is one purpose and decree, which in its infinite compass comprehends all these vanities and orders together. This much we may indeed lawfully conceive of his decree, that there is an exact correspondence and suitableness between his majesty's purpose and execution, and that he is a wise Lord, wonderful in counsel and excellent in working, having some great plot and design before his eyes, which he intends to effect, and which is, as it were, the great light and sun of this firmament, unto which, by that same wonderful counsel, all other things are subordinate, and so in the working it shall appear exactly, as his counsel did delineate and contrive it. There is no man so empty or shallow, but he hath some great design and purpose which he chiefly aims at. Shall we not then conceive that the Lord, who instructs every man to this discretion, and teaches him, Isaiah 28:26, is himself wise in his counsel, and hath some grand project before him in all this fabric of the world, and the upholding of it, since it was made? Certainly he hath. And if you ask what it is, the wise man will teach you in general he made all things for himself, yea, even the wicked for the day of evil, Proverbs 16:4. Here, then, is his great design and purpose to glorify himself, to manifest his own name to men and angels. Now, his name comprehends wisdom, goodness, power, mercy, and justice. The first three he declares in all the works of his hands. All are well done and wisely done. The excellency of the work shows the wonderful counselor and the wise contriver. The goodness of any creature in its kind declares the inexhausted spring of a self-being from whom it proceeds, and the bringing all these out of nothing, and upholding them, is a glorious declaration of his power. But yet, in all the works of his hands, there is nothing found to manifest his glorious mercy and justice, upon which are the flower and garland of his attributes, and unto which wisdom and power seem to be subservient. Therefore his majesty, in that one entire purpose of his own glory, resolves to manifest his wrath and his mercy upon men and angels, subjects capable of it, which two attributes are, as the poles about which all the wheels of election and reprobation turn, as you see in that place, Romans 9:22 and 23. Let this then be established, as the end of all his works, as it is designed in his counsel, and nothing else. It is not the creature, nor anything in the creature, which is first in his mind, but himself, and therefore of him, and for him, are all things. Here they have their rise, and thither they return, even to the ocean of God's eternal glory, from whence all did spring. The right establishing of this will help us to conceive a right of his counsel of predestination. It is a common cavil of carnal reason, how can the Lord reject so many persons, and foreordain them to destruction? It seems most contrary to his goodness and wisdom, to have such an end of eternal predestination before him, in the creating of so many, to make men for nothing, but to damn them. Here carnal reason, which is enmity to God, triumphs, but consider, I say, that this is not the Lord's end and chief design, to destroy men. Even, as it is not his majesty's first look, or furthest reach, to give unto others eternal life, so it is not his prime intent to sink them into eternal death, as if that were his pleasure and delight. No, indeed. Neither is the creature's happiness nor its misery that which first moves him, or is most desired of him, but himself only, and he cannot move out of himself to any business, but he must return it unto himself. Therefore the wise preacher expresses it well, he made all for himself, even the wicked for the day of evil. It was not his great end of creating wicked men to damn them, or creating righteous men to save them, but both are for a further and higher end, for himself and his own glory. All seem to agree about this, that the great end of all the Lord's counsels and decrees is his own glory, to be manifested on men and angels, and that this must be first in his mind. Not that there is first or last with him, but to speak after the manner of men. If he had many thoughts, as we have, this would be his first thought, and in this one purpose this end is chiefly aimed at, and all other things are by the Lord's counsel subordinate to this, as means to compass that. But as concerning the order of these means, and consequently of his majesty's purpose about them, men, by examining his majesty according to the creature's rules, or according to sense, bring him down far below his own infinite greatness. Some conceive that that was first, as it were, in his mind which is first done. Looking upon the execution of his purpose in the works of his power, they imagine that, as he first created man righteous, so this was his first thought concerning man, to create man for the glory of his goodness and power, without any particular determination, as yet of his end. And I conceive, this is the thought of the multitude of people. They think God was disappointed in his work, when they hear he created such a glorious creature that is now become so miserable. They cannot believe that his majesty had all this sin and misery determined with him, when he purposed to create him, but look upon the emergent of man's fall into sin and misery as a surprisal of his majesty, as if he had meant another thing in creating him, and so was, upon this occasion of man's sin, driven to a new consultation about the helping of the business, and making the best out of it that might be. Thus through wisdom, the world knows not God. They think God altogether like themselves, and so liken him to the builder of a house, who set nothing before him in doing so, but to build it after that manner for his own ends, but then being surprised with the fall and ruin of it, takes a new advisement, and builds it up again upon another and a surer foundation. But because they cannot say that God takes any new advisements in time, but must confess that all his counsels are everlasting concerning all the works of his hands, therefore they bring in foreknowledge to smooth their irreligious conceit of God, as if the Lord, upon his purpose of creating man, had foreseen what should befall him, and so purposed to permit it to be so, that out of it he might erect some glorious fabric of mercy and justice upon the ruins of man. And that little or nothing may be left to the absolute sovereign will of God, to which the Scripture ascribes all things, they must again imagine, that upon his purpose of sending Christ to save sinners, he is yet indetermined about the particular end of particular men, but watches on the tower of foreknowledge to espy what they will do, whether men will believe on his Son or not, whether they will persevere in faith or not, and according to his observation of their doings, so he applies his own will to carve out their reward or portion of life or death. These are even the thoughts which are inbred in your breasts by nature. That which the learned call Arminianism is nothing else but the carnal reason of men's hearts, which is enmity to God. It is that very disputation which Paul in this chapter exclaims against, "Who art thou, O man, that disputest?" But certainly, all this contrivance is nothing beseeming the wisdom or sovereignty of God, but reflects upon both upon his wisdom, that he should have thoughts of creating the most noble of his creatures, and yet be in suspense about the end of the creature, and have that in uncertainty what way his glory shall indeed be manifested by it. Is it not the first and chief thought of every wise man, what he intends and aims at in his work, and according to the measure and reach of his wisdom, so he reaches further in his end and purpose? Shall we then conceive the only wise God so far to have mistaken himself, as to do that which no wise man would do? He who is of such an infinite reach of wisdom and understanding, to fall upon the thoughts of making such an excellent creature, and yet to lie in suspense within himself about the eternal estate of it, and to be in a waiting posture what way his glory should be manifested by it, whether in a way of simple goodness only, or in a way of justice, or in a way of mercy, till he should foresee, off the tower of foreknowledge, how that creature should behave itself. Our text speaks not thus, for in the place, Ephesians 1, we have the Lord, in his eternal purpose, carving out to such and such particular persons an inheritance, and adoption of children, for that great end of the glory of his grace, verse 11 and 5 and 6. And predestination falls out, not according to our carriage, but according to the purpose of him who works all things that he works, after the counsel of his own will, without consulting our will. And if you inquire what are these all things, certainly we must take it simply for all things that are at all, or have any real being his power, his hand must be in it, and that according to his own counsel, without respect head to the creature's will, according to his own good pleasure. Verse 5, 11. He had no sooner thought of working and making man, but this purpose was in it, to make such men to the praise of his glorious grace, and to foreordain them to an inheritance, and others to make or fit them for destruction, as the text, Romans 9:22, bears. Herein the great and unsearchable wisdom of God appears to be a great depth, that, when he hath a thought of making such a vessel, he hath this purpose in the bosom of it, what use it shall be, for, whether for honor or dishonor, and accordingly, in his counsel, he prepares it either to glory or destruction, and in time makes it fit for its use, either by sin or grace. Here is the depth that cannot be sounded by mortal men. Oh, the depth of the riches both of his wisdom and knowledge! How unsearchable are his judgments, and his ways past finding out! The whole tenor of the scriptures shows that his majesty was not surprised and taken at unawares by Adam's fall, but that it fell out according to the determinate counsel of his will. If he knew it, and suffered it to be, certainly he permitted it, because he willed it should be so. And why may he not determine that in his holy counsel which his wisdom can disabuse to the most glorious end that can be? Why may not he decree such a fall, who out of man's ruins can erect such a glorious throne for his grace and justice to triumph into? It is more for the glory of his infinite wisdom to bring good, and such a good out of evil, than only to permit that good should be. Then such doctrine is repugnant to the Lord's absolute power and sovereignty, which is Paul's sanctuary, whither he flies unto as a sure refuge, from the stroke or blast of carnal reason. Hath not the potter power over the clay, of the same lump to make one vessel to honor, and another to dishonor? Verse 21. Hath not the Lord more absolute dominion over us than the potter hath over the clay? For the potter made not the clay, but the Lord hath made us of nothing. So that simply and absolutely we are his, and not our own, and so he hath an absolute right to make any use of us he pleases, without consulting our wills and deservings. Can any man quarrel him for preparing him to destruction, seeing he owes nothing to any man, but may do with his own what he pleases? What, if God, willing to make known his power, and justice, and wrath, have fitted and prepared some vessels for destruction, with which in time he bears much, and forbears long, using much patience towards them? Verse 22. Can any man challenge him for it? And what, if God, willing to make known the riches of his grace, have prepared some vessels to glory, shall any man's eye be evil, because he is good? Verse 23. Shall man be left to be his own disposer, and the shaper of his own fortune? Sure it was not so with Esau and Jacob, they were alike in the womb. If there was any prerogative, Esau the eldest had it, they had done neither good nor evil. What difference was then between them to cast the balance of his will? Can you imagine any? Indeed, carnal reason will say that God foreknew what they would do, and so he chose or rejected them. But, why doth not the apostle answer thereunto that objection of unrighteousness in God? Verse 14. It had been ready and plain. But rather he opposes the will and calling of God to all works past or to come. He gives no answer but this: he will have mercy, because he will have mercy, that is the supreme rule of righteousness, and hitherto must we flee, as the surest anchor of our hope and stability. Our salvation depends not on our willing or running, on our resolving or doing, but upon this primitive good pleasure and will of God, on which hangs our willing and running and obtaining. It is certainly an inorderly order, to flee unto that in men, for the cause of God's eternal counsels, which only flows from His eternal counsel, Ephesians 1:4. Hath He chosen us, because He did foreknow that we would be holy, and without blame, as men think? Or hath He not rather chosen us to be holy and without blame? He cannot behold any good or evil in the creatures, till His will pass a sentence upon it, for from whence should it come? Seeing then this order and contrivance of God's purpose is but feigned, it seems to some that the very contrary method were more suitable even to the rules of wisdom. You know what is first in men's intention is last in execution. The end is first in their mind, then the means to compass that end. But in practice again, men fall first upon the means, and by them come at length to attain their end. Therefore those who would have that first, as it were, in God's mind, which He doth first, do even cross common rules of reason in human affairs. It would seem then, say some, that this method might do well, that what is last in His execution was first in His purpose, and by Him intended, as the end of what He doth first, and so some do rank His decrees that He had first a thought of glorifying man, and to attain this end He purposed to give him grace, and for this purpose to suffer him to fall, and for all to create him. But we must not look thus upon it either. It were a foolish and ridiculous counsel, and beseeming the poor wisdom of man, to purpose the glorifying of man whom He had not yet determined to create. Therefore we should always have it in our mind that the great end and project of all is the glory of His mercy and justice upon men, and this we may conceive is first in order, neither men's life nor death, but God's glory to be manifested upon men. Now, to attain this glorious end, with one inclination or determination of His will, not to be distinguished or severed, He condescends upon all that is done in time, as one complete and entire mean of glorifying Himself, so that one of them is not before another in His mind, but altogether. For attaining this, He purposes to create man. He ordains the fall of all men into a state of sin and misery, and some of those, upon whom He had resolved to show His mercy, He gives them to Christ to be redeemed, and restored by grace, others, He foreordains them to destruction, and all this at once, without any such order, as we imagine. Now, though He intend all this at once and together, yet it doth not hence follow that all these must be executed together. As, when a man intends to build a house for his own accommodation, there are many things in the house upon which he hath not several purposes, but yet they must be severally, and in some order done. First the foundation laid, then the walls raised, then the roof put on, yet he did not intend the foundation to be for the walls, or the walls for the roof, but altogether for himself. Even so the Lord purposes to glorify His mercy and justice upon a certain number of persons, and for this end to give them a being, to govern their falling into misery, to raise some out of it by a mediator, and to leave some into it to destruction, and all this, as one entire mean to illustrate His glorious mercy and justice. But these things themselves must be done not all at once, but one before another, either, as their own nature requires, or as He pleases. The very nature of the thing requires that man be created, before he sin, that he sin and fall, before a mediator suffer for his sin that he have a being, before he have a glorious being, and that he have a sinful and miserable being, before he have this glorious and gracious being which may manifest the grace and mercy of God. But it is the pleasure of the Lord that determines in what time and order Christ shall suffer, either before or after the conversion of sinners, or, whether sinners shall be presently instated in glory, and perfectly delivered from all sin at their first conversion, or only in part during this life.